Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the April 2025 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing the short remainder of RF Current. The public is advised to file reply comments by Monday, April 28, 2025, through this document, docs, that's D-O-C-S, .fcc.gov/public/attachments/da-25-219a1.pdf. FCC's revolving door. Ajit Pai, now president of Consumer Technology Industry Association. Following a long-standing tradition at the FCC, former chairman Ajit Pai was named president of CTIA, formerly known as the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association, and now known simply as the Wireless Association, a wireless industry lobbying group appointed by the FCC by the Obama administration in 2012. He served on the commission throughout the first Trump term, resigning in January 2021. Since leaving the FCC, Pai had been with Searchlight Capital Partners, a private equity firm investing in communications, media, financial services, and business services. At CTIA, Pai succeeds Meredith Atwell Baker, herself a former FCC commissioner, who announced her retirement this past December after heading CTIA for 10 years. An image on this page shows a man speaking into a handheld microphone. He's seated in front of pieces of radio equipment. To the left of the equipment is a computer keyboard, mouse, and monitor. The caption reads, 2010, Julio Rapal, WD4R at University of Miami, Haiti Communications Center, talks to HH2/WX4NHC, located at Field Hospital in Haiti. Courtesy, WX4NHC. Julio Rapal, WD4R, ARRL 2025 Hamvention Special Achievement Award. According to an announcement on the ARRL homepage, Julio Rapal, WD4R, will receive a Special Achievement Award as part of Dayton Hamvention 2025 at this year's Hamvention. Rapal was co-founder and first coordinator for amateur radio at the National Hurricane Center in Miami, and has been a volunteer operator there since 1980. He was also coordinator and founder of University of Miami Haiti HAMS, HH2/WX4NHC, the largest and longest sustained international deployment of amateur and Mars operators to provide communications after the magnitude 7.0 earthquake that struck Haiti in January 2010. A professional architect specializing in medical clinics and scientific laboratory design, he has been a consulting architect for the University of Miami School of Medicine since 1994. Julio told TSM, "It is an honor to have been selected for this award. I will be retiring from my volunteer duties at NHC this year and retiring from my work at University of Miami. One of my longtime WX4NHC ops will be taking over my duties. Thanks to everyone for your support throughout the years." A profile of the life and career of Julio Rapal, WD4R, appeared in the August 2012 issue of Monitoring Times, which can be read at www.wireless.org worldradiohistory.com /archive-monitoring-times/2000s, that's 2000s, /monitoring-times-2012-08.pdf. And now, Heathkit HX1681, a deep dive into a rare classic, Part 1, by Steve Reed, KW4H. In a previous series of articles, I detailed the design and restoration of the Heathkit HR1680 receiver. This article will focus on the HR1680's intended companion transmitter, the HX1681, which, unlike the receiver, is a rare bird that can be very hard to find. An image on the page shows the pair of the 1680 receiver and the 1681 transceiver with a set of Morse code paddles placed between the pair. The caption reads, "A Heathkit HX1681 CW transceiver left, paired with a Heathkit HR1680 receiver, KW4H photo." The HX1681 transmitter, sold by Heathkit for a brief period from about 1979 to 1981, is a rather fascinating little piece of Heathkit history. While this article will cover the technical design and restoration of an HX1681 in great detail, we will also explore the interesting engineering and historical trivia surrounding the creation and marketing of the HX1681. I have an insatiable thirst for background information on everything that crosses my workbench. I want to know why it was created, who engineered it, who bought it, and, as the case may be, why it may have flopped. This makes restoration so much more interesting and enjoyable. There's a backstory to almost every piece of old technology, and the HX1681 is no exception. So, grab a cup of coffee, or something stronger if you prefer, and let's get moving. We'll start with some historical background on Heathkit, then tie that into the HX1681 itself. Following that, we'll explore the HX1681 at the design level, and then plunge into the complete restoration of a broken one, and have a look at the transmitter from the inside out. Some important Heathkit history. Heathkit, one of the most venerable forces in amateur radio history, went out of business due to a variety of internal and external conditions that, like a cancer of sorts, slowly but rather dramatically destroyed the company. To understand at least some of what happened, you need to wind the clock back to 1978, when a company called Schlumberger owned Heath and had for many years. Schlumberger also owned other companies, many of which gobbled up semiconductors, and Heath happened to be purchasing millions of semiconductors annually from a separate company called Fairchild. Schlumberger took note of this at the corporate level, and their plan became to acquire Fairchild. The Federal Trade Commission objected, declaring the idea an antitrust issue. If Schlumberger wanted to buy Fairchild, they had to sell Heath. Heathkit was summarily put up for sale in December 1978. At nearly the same time Heathkit was put up for sale by Schlumberger, the development of Heath's H89 all-in-one computer was wrapped up, and a company called Zenith saw dollar signs. By the fall of 1979, Zenith had acquired Heathkit mainly for its computer offerings. Schlumberger pocketed the cash from the sale and wandered off to buy Fairchild. Zenith then quickly embarked on a budget-slashing agenda. annually cutting the budgets of every Heathkit department by 15% a year, except for the computer division. In 1982, layoffs began, and the effects were devastating on the amateur radio group. If you doubt this, pull out an old Heathkit catalog from about 1983 or later, and you'll only see amateur radio products that weren't a whole lot to write home about. Refinements and simple things, for the most part. An image on this page shows the front page of a Heathkit catalog. The caption reads, "Cover of Heathkit Spring 1991 Catalog. Note, sale. Author's collection." By 1985, nothing new was being produced, and Heathkit's amateur radio group was a mere skeleton crew. Zenith continued plundering and mismanaging the company for a few years, until it was sold to Group Bull in 1989. Group Bull determined that electronic kits were no longer viable in the marketplace and killed Heathkit's kit business altogether. The final gasps of the kits were seen in 1991, when the Heathkit Spring catalog was dumping any remaining kits at sale prices. Of course, competitive market forces also played a role in Heathkit's demise, such as the growing availability of foreign-made offerings and the overall declining economic viability of electronic kits. Indeed, even in a more favorable market, Heathkit still might not have survived. There's no question, however, that Zenith was only interested in the computer side of the business and accelerated the demise of everything else Heathkit offered. The foregoing information is admittedly an oversimplification of Heathkit's demise. The complex details could consume an entire article, maybe even a book. For the purposes of this article, however, the important takeaway is to recognize the timeline and atmosphere in which the HX-1681 was developed and marketed. As a wrap-up note, very little remains, relatively speaking, of Heathkit's internal historical records. According to some accounts, much was literally thrown into dumpsters as far back as the mid-80s. This included engineering notes, sales records, advertising photos, manuals, catalogs, and more. Reportedly, some employees salvaged a few things from the dumpsters, but the very low morale and understandably fed-up attitude played a significant hand. The HX-1681 transmitter, or is it the HX-1675? With the above historical timeline in mind, let's now navigate to the HX-1681 transmitter. Intended to be the companion to the HR-1680 receiver, it was labeled the HX-1675 during initial development. The transmitter appeared in an advertisement along with the receiver in the fall of 1976 with the teaser, "Coming soon." Therefore, we know that the original development of what would eventually become the HX-1681 began in better times, at least 2 years before Heathkit was put up for sale by Schlumberger. Heathkit's intent was for the HR-1680 HX-1675 pair to be the modern replacement for the aging HR-10B and DX-60B duo. It wasn't until the fall of 1979, however, that the transmitter was actually released. Note that the timing of this roughly aligns with Zenith's acquisition of Heathkit and the beginning of the end, so to speak, for Heath's amateur radio group. The causes for the delay are interesting and worth discussing. Heath's original intent was for the HX-1675 to be all solid-state, including the driver and finals. Given available technology at the time, however, this proved to be overly ambitious, as whatever solid-state devices Heath's engineers were using reportedly kept blowing up on the bench. Oops. Heath decided to go back to the drawing board and redesign the HX1675 using tubes for the driver and finals. Relabeled the HX1681, it was finally launched about 2 years after its companion receiver hit the market. Not ideal, but the best they could do. There are two images on this page. One shows a segment of a catalog page, and at the bottom of the catalog page is a box with the text, "Coming soon, HX1675 CW transmitter, the perfect companion for the HR1680. Use them both for a sophisticated station." The caption reads, "KW4H HX1681 coming soon, author's collection." The other image shows the interior of the HX1681 with the top cover removed. Major features are indicated with arrows, such as the power supply, HFO mixer board, VFO, and output filter and driver. The caption reads, "View inside the HX1681 with annotations. KW4H photo." Sales of the HX1681 were awful. Much time had passed. In an era of increasing interest in SSB and multi-mode rigs, the HX1681, being a CW-only transmitter, was such an albatross that Heath ended up pulling it from production a year before the HR1680 receiver. This would have been circa 1982, when the layoffs at Heathkit were in full motion. The amateur radio group was being allocated a lot less support from Zenith, and morale was being destroyed. Heathkit was beginning to gasp for breath. Consequently, few of these transmitters were sold compared to the HR1680 receiver, a condition reflected online today, where the HR1680 is plentiful, but the HX1681 is about as scarce as it gets. And if you do find an HX1681, most will be inoperative and in dire need of repair. So, before we begin a technical dissection of the HX1681, a few words about where this transmitter stands today in the overall picture of everything Heathkit. The HX1681 works fine as a standalone transmitter and does work with other receivers, but it really begs to be paired with the HR1680. Together, they're often referred to as the Heathkit twins, but admittedly, the terminology may be a bit gratuitous, as the SB300 and SB400 were also labeled the Heathkit twins. The HR1680/HX1681 combo, in the opinion of this author anyway, is a terrific retro CW station. A decently restored HR1680 can be extraordinarily sensitive and fun to operate, and the HX1681 delivers a nominal 100-watt punch on every band except 10 meters, where the output lingers around 75 watts or so. Your mileage may vary on the power output, depending on the condition of the 6146 tubes you use, and the QSK is remarkable for the era. My hope is that anyone who procures an HX1681 is pairing it with the HR1680. These transmitters are so hard to find that doing anything else is almost criminal. The HX1681 design. The HX1681 is a CW-only transmitter that covers the old-fashioned 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10-meter bands. Overall, it's a fairly straightforward, no-nonsense transmitter that uses mostly conventional circuitry for the day. As mentioned already, its shining attribute is the terrific QSK break-in when paired with the HR1680. The QSK circuitry in the HX1681, located on the antenna switchboard, is all solid state and completely silent. No relay noise of any kind, and the release time between transmit and receive is virtually instantaneous. Simply marvelous. We'll cover the details of that circuitry later in this article. We'll begin with understanding the physical lay of the land. Referring to the annotated view of the HX1681 chassis, there are six circuit boards. VFO board, located towards the front of the chassis and just left of center, this circuitry is somewhat similar to the VFO in the HR1680 receiver. Like the HR1680, it generates a signal ranging from 5.5 MHz at 0 on the dial to 5.0 MHz at 500 on the dial. The VFO board, as well as everything immediately around it, will be dismantled and fully serviced during restoration. HFO mixer board. The only plug-in style board in the transmitter, the HFO mixer board, is positioned along the far left-hand side of the chassis and is mounted vertically. The easiest board to service and upgrade in the transmitter, the HFO mixer board is also one of the most important to deal with during restoration. Power supply board. The HX1681 uses one of the usual Heathkit external power supplies, e.g. HP23, PS23. So calling this a power supply board is a bit of a stretch. It does rectify and regulate the 12.6 volts AC coming from the external supply, but that's about it for power supply functions. The other functions performed by the circuits on this board are far more consequential. These include the keying circuit, muting circuit, and side tone oscillator. This board also controls the delay time for switching from transmit to receive when using an external linear amplifier. Moderately difficult to service, but unavoidable if you want a proper restoration. An image on this page shows the block diagram of the transmitter, with the major elements indicated. The caption reads, HX1681 block diagram. Antenna switchboard. Mounted behind a safety cover, this circuitry provides solid-state antenna switching, which enables the HX1681 to operate with full break-in. Moderately complex to remove and service, but worth the effort to do so, as many problems with the transmitter can exist on this board due to hidden sloppy construction work. Driver board. The driver tube used in the HX1681 is a 12BY7. This circuit board is home to a solid-state pre-driver stage, as well as the 12BY7. The output of the HFO mixer board is routed to these circuits. Removal for service is usually not necessary and not recommended due to the many rotary switch connections. Output filter board. Out of immediate view, but mounted vertically just inside the front of the finals cage, is the output filter board. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.